Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Lisa McNeely. My pronouns are she and her. I'm your host for Spotlight on Recruiting, and I'm happy to welcome our leading lady, Samara Hakim, to the show. Hi, Samara.
Hi, Lisa. Great to be here.
I am excited to have you here today as we discuss inclusive partnerships. I think the need for organizations to practice inclusion obviously isn't new. However, because of Black Lives Matter, Me Too, I feel there's an increased awareness for the need for inclusion within the world we work, live, and play. The employers that I'm speaking with, as far as recruitment comes to mind, it's that they don't have a diverse candidate pool within their recruiting efforts. As I'm questioning them, I'm finding out they're continuously recruiting from the same source. And I think this is just another reason why inclusive partnerships are so important, not just overall in business, but just in recruiting efforts as well. This is a really broad topic. We're not going to cover everything in the next half hour. However, you know, my hope is our listeners are going to come away with a deeper understanding of inclusive partnerships and then maybe one or two ideas on how they can take action and enrich the partnerships that they have or they're going to be building. So before we get started, I have to share with our listeners how amazing our leading lady, Samara Hakim, is. Samara is an international I can hear you blushing, Samara. International culture and inclusion strategist, thought leader, and founder of Culture Grit. For over a decade, Samara has equipped leaders with culture intelligence to work with those who are different by mitigating bias and integrating culture into business metrics. Samara was honored with the 2018 Women of Excellence Entrepreneur Award by Diversity Professional Magazine. Samara is a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and holds an advanced certificate in intercultural management from the University of Notre Dame. She also has a doctorate from the University of Oregon School of Law. So inspiring, Samara.
Thank you, Lisa. So, likewise.
So I am going to just, you know, just tell us, you know, what are inclusive partnerships, not just within the organization, but internally and externally?
When I think of the word partnership, I think of people coming together as equals, working purposefully towards a common goal or cause. So being inclusive in that is about acknowledging the value everyone brings, as well as the differences that we might have, and having the skills to work across these differences so we can achieve our goal. Like you mentioned, within the organization internally, those partnerships can take many forms, from our teams to cross-departmental and cross functional partnerships or various affinity or resource groups within the organization. Externally, that would include collaborating with associations and various groups, schools, institutions, community councils, supplier diversity councils, or any business-to-business groups or councils and chambers of commerce, but specifically including those that serve targeted populations and underserved or underestimated communities. The important piece of this to note is that these are beyond organizations to which we might just donate or fund occasionally. A partnership is deeper than that, in terms of support and collaboration.
And I think, you know, that really many times these existing structures, you know, these groups or these partnerships, they're often overlooked, you know, as we focus on our opportunities to drive greater inclusion. And again, as I had said, for both, you know, business and in recruiting. And it's just places that people don't typically think to look to develop those. So it kind of leads me to the next question, you know, why are inclusive partnerships so important to an organization?
Yeah, and, you know, exactly what you said, they're overlooked, unfortunately. And just to start kind of at the beginning, generally, when we're interacting with anyone who's different than us, we are compelled to reevaluate our thoughts or words. We need to be able to articulate the reasoning behind them. If those around us are constantly confirming what we think about, they're agreeing with us all the time, we're not questioning our approach, we're not rethinking it. And this is not necessarily to change our opinion each time, but to solidify it sometimes, and even to look at different ways of putting an idea into action. So that's one reason for periods just partnering with people who are different than us. But from a business or organizational standpoint, this is good for innovation, for the bottom line, the impact we want to have, brand perception, tapping into new markets, expanding our social responsibility efforts. All of this is doable if we're able to be purposeful in our partnerships. So that's really important, being genuine about them too, and tying them to an objective that we have in our business or organization, tying specific goals to the impact that we want to make. And we need to be inclusive in our partnering, basically in the sense that within a larger organization, it needs to be integrated into all business departments and their metrics, and we need to foster a mindset around the importance for this. From similar to what you said earlier, you know, why this is important and maybe top of mind for many organizations now is because we are in changing times, and if they've taught us anything, these changing times, this is the, you know, there's so much power in agility and the need for collaboration. And the research shows us that surrounding ourselves with diversity and having the tools already streamlined and established to leverage it, we're going to be able to manage change a lot faster. Historically, diverse suppliers and small businesses have had to be agile and pivot quickly. So this is top of mind for investors, for funders, for shareholders, for boards of directors. And because also we are being confronted more publicly and visibly on social media and in the news by racial injustice, by gender inequality, the relationship specifically between poverty and race and ethnicity, the struggles of the transgender community, we want to think about, do we want the trust of all our employees and customers? And I know, you know, you're looking at this all the time in your work when people are coming in and ask you about organizations. So do we have a vision into the future with the changing demographics in our society and the economic impact that we want to make?
No, really good. So, I mean, and you're right. You know, as far as recruiting, that is one of the things that people are looking at is they're coming into an organization because people want to go somewhere. We spend so much time at work that they mm-hmm. want to be in a place that makes them comfortable and they feel welcomed and a part of a community. And in the early stages of a recruiting process, you know, what they're doing is before they apply for a job, they're looking online, they're talking to people, they're researching to see, you know, what is the community like? What is the culture like in this organization? So, you know, and
exactly.
I think as you talked about agility, I know most businesses would like the ability to better manage change, you know, connect with both their customers and prospective, you know, employees, but then, you know, just have greater success at for recruiting, but then also in retaining their great talent. So I think it's, you know, really, it is important.
Yeah, and, you know, from the research, we know that depending on the group, you might end up with as much as 90% increased likelihood of your product or your services being purchased by a particular group if you are conscious of them in your efforts. And like you said, they're looking, right? They're looking for actions specifically. So it's a very exciting time for business to be doing good, really seeing beyond the pity and charity, but seeing the power of diversity.
So, Smart, tell me, because, you know, your passion and your knowledge is obviously very inspiring. So tell me, how did you get involved in this area?
Well, I myself am the product of equity and inclusive partnerships. Basically, from the time that I arrived in the U.S. as a teenager to going through college, law school, and doing my business, I've had people along the way who went out of their comfort zone and engaged with me and my skills. And, of course, I did the same. I think I was always meant to be doing this as I had this curiosity and love for culture, for communication, and for social impact. I love being a connector. And this work is definitely at the intersection of all of these. in school and college and law school, I was involved with community service and specific clinics and associations, and those are very eye-opening when you're working specifically with marginalized groups. Then working as a nonprofit lawyer with multicultural clients, looking at the language of the law and the way that a statement or a client's story told with a cultural lens can make such a huge difference. Just, you know, on that, one example is I was once representing a client who was a survivor of domestic violence. And there were facts that she did not feel that she could share an open courtroom. So having that cultural lens, knowing it, is very important, and this is very rare, by the way. What we did, we were able to seal the courtroom to create that space for the client to be able to share that story. Many times, additionally, just from a personal standpoint, I found myself negotiating my own identity in that profession, and I'm still doing that pretty much on a daily basis. So I wanted to be part of making a difference, and it started with being invited with a partnership, basically, to hold cultural competence trainings with my managing attorney. And I just loved those facilitations, and then I found my way to do this work, to make a long story short. And in 2015, I founded Culture Grit, and under then it was a different name, but we equip leaders to work with those who are different than them. So we do it from a global standpoint as well as your domestic U.S. focus. We do that through strategy and development and facilitations that help the clients develop their inclusion efforts and become more culturally intelligent, specifically to reach their business objectives. So on your topic today, specifically with the inclusive partnerships, our projects have included making procurement more inclusive and optimizing external partnerships in nonprofit and for-profit. So that's kind of the long story of how I ended up here and doing this work that I enjoy. No. But in terms of my identity as a woman of color, so when I started my business, when I think back, you know, I was also a mom of young babies and living just for a couple of years in the town that I'm in and without much of a network, right? So inclusive partnerships have been just so important to move my dreams forward. I think of growth partners along the way, from my co-working space, Hera Hub, to the guidance that I've received through Hera Labs, which are now Stella Labs, to many collaborations and organizations that I belong to now. So beyond the support, when I look at partnerships in my life, they're essential part of doing our work effectively at Culture Grit in order to have multiple perspectives and incorporating those into our design and consultation.
No, that's really good. I mean, and you're a living example of what it is to develop those partnerships. My next question is, and probably something everybody is, you know, wanting to know is, you know, what are the first steps an organization should do to create these partnerships?
Yeah, there are many steps, right, internally and also externally, but it's good to target. Really start with this kind of mindset around what partnerships are. We need to look at the partnerships as a talent strategy, a growth strategy, and customer strategy, kind of like all of the things that we said why it's important. If we create an inclusive space internally, that is, and foster that inclusion, going out then and creating various partnerships will be successful, and it's actually going to be more authentic. So if you don't have the work done internally, it's going to be a challenge. Fostering that awareness around the value of inclusion and the skills to support and work with those that are different than us, that's really important. You can do that through employee resource groups or business groups, internal affinity groups of any kind, and having inclusive procurement and sourcing, and on all of that, basically, to then do outreach externally and make that more facilitated. In fact, people on your staff, and that's, I know that that's a big piece of your work is, you know, that connection between when people come in and who they're bringing, their whole self, right? Thinking of their own communities, these people who are on our staff might be able to help us as well. Creating and designing the space to source a diversity of ideas internally. And then from there, you're going to get a ton to be able to target and optimize your partnerships externally. So that's what I would say high level, kind of. I mean, we could drill down to specifics, if you like.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you're right. I mean, it all starts with people. And, you know, as I had mentioned before, it's, you know, for recruiting, we want to have a diverse candidate pool, and then it's hiring from the best from this pool. So as far as a recruiting strategy, it's, you know, actively, like you had said, reaching out to your employees, your employee resource groups or your affinity groups. Look mm-hmm. at your board, leveraging their networks and their inclusive partnerships. You know, just having a think outside the box of where you can go and develop those relationships. You know, and then externally, we kind of talked about this as well, but it's leveraging your suppliers, the associations mm-hmm. that you're part of, the chambers of commerce, and, you know, and actively seeking out referrals from those. And I think one of the, you know, the big things is, you know, you want to work with organizations, whether, you know, it's an internal group or it's an external. You want to help achieve their goals, not just yours. And for, you know, recruiting, it's, you know, what we talk about is you want to develop those relationships, even if your organization isn't hiring right now. It's kind of that, you know, giver's gain, I guess, mentality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I guess as far as examples, I mean, some of the things that, you know, we do within recruiting is, you know, you promote your promote those organizations within your company. You know, you could volunteer your facilities for a meeting, you know, host workshops for career coaching advice. And these are all things that, you know, I have done in my career with organizations that we have done to try and build those relationships. And it's about giving to them. But then also when the time comes and we're hiring, you know, we feel comfortable to reach out and get their support as well. So I think, you know, it's just important for that warm and welcoming environment.
Yeah, basically, this is, you know, beyond the what to do, it's how to do it. You know, it is key to keep in mind that part of the design is not rooted in tokenism, and that it is purposeful in inviting feedback and inviting the partners as equals into your organization and your spaces, asking about their needs. In one project, you reminded me, we made sure that the design included inviting input and allowed for the presentations, conversations, information exchange to be adapted. So we're not falling into the trap of also supporting those organizations with a ton of resources already that are invested in the messaging or branding, but rather being mindful of culture and bias and equity and what an organization is truly doing to represent and develop their community members. You know, are they trusted by that community? That's very important to look at as well. So investing the time and research and finding, sponsoring, supporting partners through skills development is very important, in addition to, you know, doing that internally for your talent and thinking about how vendors can be connected to one another. I mean, procurement and supplier diversity professionals are so key for reaching out to these networks and building these authentic relationships and showing the return on investment from that, from those relationships and collaborations. But also, it's important that we're working also to connect, let's say, you know, the prime tier one vendors with the tier two vendors and holding the direct vendors accountable for what they are doing in their efforts as well. So in short, basically, all external partnerships need to be rooted in a business strategy. Otherwise, they're not going to be sustainable and actionable.
Right. And for our listeners, can you explain what Tier 1 and Tier 2 is as far as diversity and suppliers?
Yes. Good point. So basically, tier one is if you're directly contracting with the organization, you're kind of that first tier. Tier two would be like you're subcontracting with another vendor. So you come in working on a project, let's say, as a subcontractor of the already direct vendors that were there.
Right. Good. And, you know, and in my work that I've done in the past in supplier diversity, we were a larger organization, and some of the mm-hmm. smaller vendors could not support, you know, the complete what we needed. So it was them actually partnering together to say, you know, we have these three different vendors, but we're going to partner so that we can meet the needs of your organization. And so I think, and you can even do that with, you know, as we had talked about, you know, internally with like employee resource groups. If you are a smaller organization and maybe you only have 5 or 10 people, you can mm-hmm. also partner at the same time with another organization to bring in, you know, members of their group and have, you know, your employee resource group or your affinity group. So I think it's really about thinking, you know, we've said it before, but, you know, outside the scope, beyond, you know, the look outside, how can you develop that relationship? And I think that, you know, one of the things that, you know, we had talked about employee resource groups quite a bit, but, you know, and they can have some good and bad pros and cons. And I think that, you know, it needs to be said that they can go beyond race, gender, sexual orientation. They're really about a shared interest. I know one organization that I worked with, they, you know, they had a green initiative resource mm-hmm. group that they focused on sustainability and the environment. You know, there's disabilities, there's working parents, there's veterans, and, you know, there's just so many
exactly.
more. You know, and I think that, you know, the groups, they need to be open to everyone and provide a sense of belonging. Have an executive champion so that groups, their voice can be heard within the organization. And I think that's what's, you know, really important, is it does need to come top down.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, exactly what you said about, you know, I need to be able to be surrounded with people who are like me, who understand this identity, but yes, being open to everybody else so that those are that might not identify directly with this particular identity, they're learning about it, and they're back to what we said about really listening to the needs and being there as allies and champions. So the ERGs are also really good from a social responsibility standpoint, right? When we think about schools and the society that we're trying to bring and the importance of the role that professionals can make in this outreach and developing and being role models for others that within those communities that they relate to and connect with. And having a business basically provide the funding for that, the support for that, the space for that is so important for the brand perception of the business, but also for a larger economic impact that could come from that.
Oh, good. Well, so for the smaller organization, you know, we touched on it just briefly, but if they have a limited budget bandwidth, what can they do to get started?
Yeah, there's a lot that can be done in inclusion with just a little effort and hardly any funds being needed. There's a fallacy there that people think you need so much money to be able to do that, regardless of your size, basically. We already touched on, you know, how large organizations are looking for. Let's say you are a small business, they're going to look to you to see if you're aligning with their values. So I won't go too much into that, but they're also looking to see, you know, your inclusive language and pitching. How do you represent yourself? Who do you subcontract to? And all of that. So ask yourself, as a business, does your mission speak to inclusion? Is that a core value that you have spelled out and shared widely? Being conscious of who you're hiring and partnering with on a regular basis. Also, part of that is looking at ourselves, working to develop ourselves on cultural intelligence and inclusive leadership skills, specifically for the leaders, but really across all the team. And if it's just you as an entrepreneur, you can invest in that development as well. Just like you develop your marketing strategy, your financial strategy, business model, how are you working on your culture and inclusion strategy? So think about sourcing raw material and what you do with that, or all of your practices in purchasing products and services. Do you do community service as a team or as an individual entrepreneur? These are very minimal costs and efforts. Do you pay attention to inclusive advertising and messaging in your business? Do you use, for example, stereotypical images on your website, or you forget to use people-first language when speaking about abilities? And, of course, if you're listening and you don't know what that is, this would be a good time to look it up. So reflecting on your network and all your products and project designs, looking for patterns as well, that's where you can start spotting bias. If you collect data, are you designing or you are designing a product or designing anything, have you checked that you source the data and ideas from various places and demographics? I love working with data. I mean, integrating culture into your business metrics is our tagline. So you'll always find me talking about that. But as a professional, you know, ask yourself also, do I notice diversity in my communities of practice? Or is everyone very similar in their journey, just kind of like me? The same story seems to replicate itself. Ask myself, do I participate in building equity and economic impact? Do I help further a nonprofit mission, for example? We don't have to do it all from scratch. That's the nice thing about these organizations. They are committed out there to social impact, and you just have to spend the time to find and research them. And so much can be done with just amplifying voices of those marginalized and underestimated around us. So much can be done by sharing our platform. Thinking about how am I passing the microphone to others or giving up my seat to those that may not have access so that they can then amplify their voices. And the way I like to think about this is basically the people in our close network, they are telling us implicitly they trust us. And anyone we bring in, they're likely going to trust. And there's so much power in that, so we want to use it for good. So part of it is also, if we've got the funds, great, we can join specific associations, we'll go to events and support. But even if that's too expensive, there's ways now, especially with the virtual world, as you know, many of these gatherings have been discounted or have become free. So how can I attend these? How can I go there and listen to what's being shared? Going to the Latin Business Association, Women's Business Centers, Veterans Association, Black Chamber of Commerce, any ethnicity-focused Chamber of Commerce. How do I find ways where when I'm listening, I can start thinking of ideas to create a product or redesign or repurpose something to support that community? So whatever you do, I would say, if you are a small organization, make sure that you reach out afterwards and don't just take and not give back somehow. We already touched a little bit on that. You can sign up for newsletters for these associations to stay in the loop. One that I like, you know, you could, in terms of a magazine that can give you insight into a lot of that and more information, Diversity Professional Magazine. It's aimed at all business sizes and corporations and vendors alike, and it is a mission-driven community platform, really. Basically, get in those maybe unfamiliar spaces. Be there to listen, not to use or take over, but to truly learn and listen very closely to people's needs and challenges and don't assume them. So getting out of our comfort zone, challenging our biases, it's so important to be working on ourselves first and also exposing ourselves to the power and the successes of those that we may have grown up stereotyping or even ignoring.
Good. So, Samara, thank you so much for your insights and encouraging organizations to get educated, get involved, and, you know, help amplify the voices. I think, you know, just building on your thoughts as it relates to recruiting, and we kind of, again, we mentioned this before, but I think it's a good takeaway is, you know, we're kind of getting down to the end, but job seekers are asking these questions when they're evaluating potential employers. You know, does the workforce, the executive team, the board, do they look like the community they're in? Is the company a good corporate steward? Are they giving back? Do they foster a culture of an inclusion, whether that's through employee resource groups, affinity groups, open communication, their onboarding practices? Do they have mentorship? And then, you know, also they're asking, do they have external inclusive partnerships? Are they partnering with, you know, inclusive organizations, and are they utilizing diversity suppliers? I think that it's a challenge to employers to proactively address, you know, all of these questions. How can our listeners reach you if they're interested in, you know, taking an assessment, or maybe they want to foster more inclusion within their organization, or, you know, they just want to have you come and speak and, you know, give some training?
Yes, first of all, yes, all that. I love the summary. And so people, you know, they can visit our website, culturegrit.com. So culturegrit is CulturGrit. And contact us from there, or they can email me directly, Samara, SAMARA, at culturegrit.com. Also, feel free to find me on LinkedIn, Samara Hakim. Last name is HAKIM. And something there, you know, through the end of February 2021, we're providing a complimentary 90-minute consultation. So make sure that you mention Women Lead Radio. And that's it. Hopefully, we'll have people reach out. And I just want to thank you again, Lisa, for this great conversation.
No, it's great to have you there. And again, just such an example of something that you can do by offering a benefit to our listeners. And those who are listening, I would encourage you to take advantage of that and contact Samara with Women Lead Radio. So, Samara, thank you so much for being our leading lady today and sharing your insights.
Thank you, Lisa. Such a pleasure always talking with you.
So a special thanks to all of our listeners, both in the U.S. and internationally. We'll be back again for another Women Pacific. The next Spotlight on Recruiting episode will be on Monday, January 4th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Have a great week, everyone.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.